So we have clear skies now, but in the height of the hazy conditions last week, stemming from the wildfires in Canada, there's been a lot of reaction from the president and it seems like a lot of Republicans across the country. So the president has called on Canada to get the wildfires under control. The president saying he actually told Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney that Canada needed to do more to contain the fires in Ontario, which the smoke then impacted our air quality across the U.S., including right here in New England, as you and I experienced together. And there was even an op-ed that recently was in the Connecticut Insider, and it was written by, it says, Republican American Editorial Board. So I don't have a specific person who wrote this per se, but I did want to get the perspective from the Connecticut Republican Party, because I do think this is now the second time in 3 years where we have seen the impact of the wildfires in a different part of the globe, specifically Canada, having that impact on us here in Connecticut. But does it mean that it triggers an economic retaliation, which is what the president is kind of hinting at, or he has actually point blank threatened economic retaliation, to be honest? So I wanted to get some perspective from the Connecticut Republican Party. And so joining us back on the show is State Senator Tony Huang from right here in Fairfield County. And Senator Huang, welcome back. I know you can't speak for the entire party, but I wasn't sure, because I do think sometimes there's a disconnect between the Connecticut Republican and the national party. What has kind of been the sense from, I would say, Connecticut lawmakers in general, but specifically the Republican Party?
Well, I can't speak for the national party, and I'm not sure I can speak for some of my Democrat and Republican colleagues. I think it's a real factor that climate change and environmental changes are a dramatic reality that we must be confronting with. And I think one of the telling points of this is we are no longer governed by borders when it comes to climate change and environmental impact. Mm. What happens in different parts of the country, whether it be air pollution, whether it be wildfire, whether it be El Nino or rising sea level and river level, or some things we've seen in regards to 100-year rainstorms, as we saw in Oxford nearly a year, over
the
a year
August
ago.
The August 18th historic flooding, right. Sure. Going to be two years in August. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. But we're seeing bursts of storms that are highly unusual and rising sea level. So I think one of the biggest concerns is we have to understand that the environment is changing. And so severity in weather, severity in impact are directly correlated with what we do as public policy. So I think that is one of the things that I've concerned myself with, is understanding that we need to reduce our carbon emissions. We need to understand that humans have a direct impact in regards to some of the devastating impact. You know, I usually do a coastal resiliency program every year, understanding that rising sea level and impact is not only an inconvenience in rising sea level, but it has public safety and significant economics. When you look at Fairfield has the most per capita housing that would be impacted in flood zones should a rising storm occur. That has profound economic impact as well as environmental impact. So for me, I can't speak for all of my colleagues, but one of the other things that we talk about environmental sustainability, Melissa, is it comes at a cost. And when you look at all the affordability concerns of being able to live in Connecticut, that combined of an affordability clause cost to balance between some of the environmental proactive actions is really where you have the conflict. It isn't Democrat or Republican, because for some of my Democratic colleagues in more rural areas, they feel very much the same way in regards to imposition of climate change initiatives that may impact their constituents in the pocketbooks.
Do you think, though, Senator Huang, and again, I know this is kind of a bigger question than, you know, one lawmaker, one or even it sounds like both parties in Connecticut to some extent, but to go to the extreme of now tariffs to make up for it. And again, I understand, like, if you look at the, you know, that Canada, it says that they have over 3,500 fires they're dealing with right now, which is just, that's just wild. No pun intended. But it says that it's a combination of different things. So you've got, for example, Mother Nature takes ownership of some of it, lightning strikes, what have you. Then you've got, again, Mother Nature with dry conditions. And we've seen that here in Connecticut plenty of times with the very, very dry conditions leading to hundreds of brush fires in a matter of a season across our state. But then you do have human error. And I brought up the example of Lamentation Mountain and how that was a campfire that was not put out properly. And that drained resources like crazy. You know, we had all of our firefighters who were on hand. We had to bring in firefighters from many neighboring states. We had to bring some in from Canada, even as far as to say, California, can you guys drive out to come help us? I mean, that was an effort for one fire, for a brush fire. And so I think that that's my only concern is if we start to, again, no pun intended, fight fire with fire. I don't know if that's going to be great because at least for Connecticut, we even have that issue of taking ownership. And I think we do a really good job of letting people know constantly how to put out fires properly. It, you know, we have dry conditions, so don't be doing this or this or this. I think we try to do the best that we can, but human error, there's only so much control you can have. So to tariff, I just don't know if that's going too far. I understand the concept, but I just wasn't sure if you agree with the idea of going as far to tariff now a country because of the wildfire activity.
Well, I don't believe tariffs on other country inhibiting free flow of marketplace is the right way to go in a open marketplace. I believe that in an open marketplace, this country's entrepreneurialism and innovation will always win out. So on a tariff basis, I think it's an artificial guard that kind of isolates us as a country. That being said, I think, you know, we are in a world of AI where technology has made everything possible, Melissa. But one thing that's not is human elements and human causes. And,
right, we have more control over things. Yeah, sure.
We do, but you know, I think maybe I'm old enough to remember that Smokey the Bear was the preeminent campaign, the public service campaign, to remind people that as you go to the outdoors, that you need to have an understanding of the responsibility to care for the land in which you've been privileged to be able to enjoy and to take care that in dry conditions that you don't throw a cigarette or in you know, not put out your campfire. So, you know, the public service program is critical to kind of make that connection. And I hope that our park services kind of resurrect in a much broader basis Smokey the Bear and the message that you know, warm and cuddly bear, but remember, put out the fire and make sure that it's completely put out. Any small amber that you think might be a distinguished fire could be ignited in these China dry conditions. But it goes back to, you're going to see more of it, Melissa, because climate change is real. And we're going through peaks and valleys in regards to drought and soggy weather. That's something we just have to contend with and realize that it's human caused, and we have an important part in being able to be proactive in that. But again, it's very hard. As a policymaker, even though you impose these kind of proactive carbon reduction policies, that comes at a pocketbook of people that can't bear the burden. So it's a tremendous trade-off and a real public conundrum in regards to how we proceed moving forward.
Well, and I think, too, this idea of just, you know, again, I call it kind of tit for tat, political just blame game, which is kind of the way that we live our lives. You know, in this op-ed, it talks about a New York Times article which quoted a professor from Ontario's McMaster University who said, and this is, again, from Connecticut Insider, it says, this professor falsely blamed the United States. It says, quote, for the most part, it's the main reason for climate change, as in the United States, is the main reason for climate change and ensuing these fires. And then the Times noted China is actually the world's largest emitter of greenhouse gases, not the United States. So there, again, it's this idea of, I think we love to kind of, I don't want to say poke the bear, but like, you know, do the whole, like, I'm going to point at you and you're going to point at me and we're just going to keep blaming. But we don't actually look at, you know, what is the issue at hand here? It just becomes everything becomes political, I think. So,
you know, Melissa, you couldn't have put it better. And I say that because We're in the midst of a political campaign season from the governors all the way down to every state rep and state senator, and I've been involved in it. But it's fascinating. You know, Connecticut's not affordable from a standpoint of health insurance rates to now water rates increasing, electric rates, and the cost of doing business, property tax rising, motor vehicle taxes. Connecticut's not affordable. But at the same time, it is one of the great, great places to live. We all know that. But here's the problem. Public policy, public leaders, instead of really providing solutions, and solutions are hard, right? Because someone's got to give, right? Mm-hmm. But the problem is now we're in a campaign season where it's all in the blame game. It's all in the blame game. And that is exactly how we have kind of devolved into our politics, rather than collaborating and working together to find solutions. For example, we could have worked together to address the sale of Aquarian. We didn't. We could have worked together to address the public benefit. We didn't. We could have looked at utilities and holding them more accountable. We didn't. And we could have held more insurance programs, health insurance, by putting in association health plans to help small and individual businesses. We didn't. The reality is the blame game, because of one side and win at all cost, is really what's impacting how we govern. And ultimately, the only people that suffer, Melissa, are the people that are struggling to stay in the state.
Right, who are paying the taxes and are just trying to raise families or have jobs here and all that. Sure. We are chatting with State Senator Tony Huang. And we are going to switch gears really quickly from the response from President Trump and many of the Republican Party, specifically across the country, regarding wildfires coming from Canada. I want to switch gears to something a little bit closer to home, Senator Huang, because I know that you have been, for quite some time, the Republican leader of the Insurance and Real Estate Committee here in our state. I don't know if you saw this article. The New York Post was saying that the state is spending a lot more than they, I'm sure, would have hoped. It says they're spending more on its massive Medicaid program than even their K-12 schools. It says it already pays more per person than anywhere else in the country. This new analysis showing that taxpayers paid an eye-watering $39.4 billion for Medicaid in the 2025-26 fiscal year, which was 26% of the entire state budget. More than $37 billion was dished out for education. So again, Medicaid topping even education. And I'm wondering here in Connecticut if we could see similar numbers at some point, because we know more and more people are qualifying for Medicaid, and we know our education spending is not where we want it to be.
We will most certainly see an increased trend in Medicare utilization. The Affordable Care Act has really kind of opened the opportunity for people to get access to health care. It's interesting because people don't fully understand Medicaid reimbursement, meaning that the federal government gives a block of money to Medicaid, and that was one of the big factors that led to the shutdown and the stalemate in federal government, because the administration had cut back in Medicare block funding. But it's unique in the sense that once that block money is given from the federal government, the state makes a determination of what rates it pays out and who is covered. And in fact, New York is quite generous, ergo the large number. What's fascinating is Connecticut has one of the lowest, or if not very low, reimbursement rate to physicians for Medicaid reimbursement. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic that we could potentially increase spending on Medicaid, one, by being on par with Medicaid reimbursement to our providers, which is artificially low in my opinion. But also, you're going to see more and more people trend toward utilization because of the affordability factor in the state of Connecticut. People just simply can't afford to pay all the costs that we talked about, electric, utilities, taxes. It's a real problem in regards, and then combined with rate increases that are being offered again, requested again to the tune of individual programs to 22% for individual from Connecticut to group plans to be about 18-19%. This is rates of double-digit increases every year. So we really need to understand cost of health care. We have one of the best health care systems in the country in Connecticut. It comes at a cost. And unfortunately, Medicaid is a huge portion and a growing portion. So the answer to your question is that New York has a significant problem in regards to overutilization, but Connecticut is heading toward that way if we increase Medicaid reimbursement rates and also try to adapt and increase the eligibility for those people that become utilizers of the Medicaid.
Well, and the other thing with that too, Senator Huang, that I kind of, you know, this is what I worry about. And again, I'm not saying that it is a bad idea per se. I think it's, again, it's an option. But the idea of the state doing its own Connecticut option, you know, one of the things I talked to Comptroller Sean Scanlon about this, because I know he's really pushing this, is that there are school districts like Norwalk. I don't know if you saw that, but Norwalk this past school year, they had already approved their budget. And they actually had to go back and add $3 million to the budget for next school year because the teachers didn't want to use the public option. They were like, it's just too expensive to be on the Connecticut. That's what I should say, not the public option, because that doesn't exist, but to be on Connecticut's health insurance plan. It was too expensive.
Yeah.
So they were like, no, let's just go back to Cigna. Let's just do that. We'd rather do that. I mean, and when you look at school budgets, for example, that is some of the biggest, I'd say, amounts that they have to figure out is the health insurance for our teachers, administrators, all that. The fact is that they didn't even want to go on Connecticut's health insurance plan because it's so expensive. So the ideas that I feel like Connecticut is even pushing are not necessarily the answers.
It is a false promise, and people need to understand it's called a Partnership 2.0 program, which passed about 10, 12 years ago to provide state-run health programs to help our municipalities. And in the initial couple of years, there were tremendous savings. And then as risk experience and utilization increased, it has run into the red every single year that has been subsidized by appropriations. As the ranking member of insurance, we've had that debate every year in the sense that a partnership program right now that's in existence has now regional labeling and all the things you don't like about health insurance programs. The difference is it's state-run. And the Connecticut option now that's being touted by the governor and Comptroller Scanlon is emphasized to be different than the partnership program, but it is the same, meaning that it is state-run government single-payer system. And the problem at hand is we have the cost of health care insurance continuing to increase. It's unsustainable, no risk experience. And then when you hit, it is the taxpayers that are footing the bill. A second part that is really important. So the association health plan that I mentioned earlier that has run up against Democratic opposition because they've been so focused on the Connecticut option is that would provide relief utilizing brokers in the marketplace as well as tested actuarial insurance experience risk rating to be able to manage the business and deliver it to group and individuals. But unfortunately, for the past 5 years, despite bipartisan approval of this and support from businesses and individual marketplaces, they refuse to do it because it's politics. And that being said, the Medicaid reimbursement, Melissa, this is what's unsaid. The increase in utilization of Medicaid reimbursement and the cost you cited in New York that I think is going to now increase in Connecticut, the private marketplace, the rate increases that I just shared with you, the private marketplace subsidizes that increase as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the unsaid unknowns that people don't want to accept is as we increase utilization of under-reimbursed Medicaid and as it continues to increase in usage and cost, it is the private marketplace of the individual small groups and the rate increases that I just talked about that are subsidizing the Medicare cost increases.
Right. So it's, again, it's just reiterating just a huge broken system. And that's why I am going to actually link this New York Post article to your podcast, Senator Huang, because I think it's important that people realize that, yes, we're already seeing it in New York. And I think we're already showing some of those tendencies here in Connecticut if we don't start to find solutions. And we may have some already, but we have to start figuring out on a bipartisan basis here in Connecticut how to actually expand our marketplace and create opportunity versus just I think sticking with the same plans, which even those are not passing on a bipartisan basis. We've gone way too many legislative sessions just kind of, again, passing the buck. And it's getting to a point where it really needs to stop. When you see that a state next door to us is now spending more on Medicaid than it is even their K-12 education budgets, that's a problem. And if we think Connecticut is immune to that, I think that's a little bit of crazy town USA. Senator Wong, thank you so much. Appreciate always having you on the show.